Hi, Amy.
Hi.
I'm good. How are you? You turned it all around.
By accident, kind of.
It works for me better. So.
I actually like it better, frankly.
Yeah. My recordings might actually work. So.
Your recordings might work, but she doesn't get the internet, so I don't know.
Oh, that's not so good.
Yeah. I just want to make some quick announcements before we introduce the board. So we do have a gentleman here at the back of the room named Sam Borden. He's here from the city. He's just going to be doing some reporting, mostly of the planning group, but just to identify, that's why we have someone that might be kind of circling the room doing some reporting. We also have translation services over here. Can I turn it over to you, Sylvia, if you want to just address the group that's here?
Yes, in Spanish. Saludos y ustedes, necesita traducción simultánea al español. Tenemos los títulos preparados, simplemente tendría que aceptarse a reconocerlo. Muchas gracias.
Thank you. Wonderful. Thank you. And then we'll move to introduce the board. I'm going to start on the left. James, can you introduce yourself and just announce the community that you're representing?
Hi, my name is Dwayne Hill. I represent Southwest.
I'm Allie Irgerby, Logan Heights.
Amy Gutierrez with Sherman Heights.
Hi, Jasmine Melvin, Logan Heights.
Oscar Gomer, Southcrest.
Aaron Gagne, Logan.
Okay, so that's going to move us into our agenda. So we did our call to order and the roll call. Are there any changes or modifications to the agenda this evening? Seeing none, can I have a motion to adopt the agenda?
Motion.
Thank you, Dwayne. Is there a second?
Second.
Aaron. All those in favor, raise their hands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That motion passes. We're going to move on to public comments. So the public may speak on matters that are not on the agenda, and you'll have 2 minutes. Yes, sir. Can you introduce yourself?
I will. I am Andrew Ferbert. I'm here on behalf of my wife, Heather Ferbert, a candidate for San Diego City Attorney. We've been coming out to community planning groups to make sure that the community understands what the role of the city attorney is and why it's important to have a practicing attorney in that position. City attorney's office handles 20,000 infractions and misdemeanors per year. That's things like elder abuse, domestic violence. Also, the civil litigation side defends the city and works on workers' behalf in the city for things like trip and fall on sidewalks and parks. Or accidents with city vehicles. And then the third main component of the city attorney's office is the civil advisory. So that's making sure that the mayoral departments and the city council gets good quality legal advice. Heather Ferbert has been working for the city for almost 11 years in a variety of roles. Right now she's in the group that handles the council relations, so advising the city council on their toughest legal issues. She has dedicated her career to the city of San Diego. She was before that working with the San Diego Housing Commission in their general counsel office. So she has been in the city She's worked around, she's practiced the law, and she is also a law professor at University of San Diego, adjunct. So when it's time to vote, please look at candidate qualifications, and you can find more at heathergerber.com. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Other public comments? Okay. Seeing none, are there any board public comments? Okay. Seeing none, I'll move on to city reports then. We have Council District 4, Mr. Miller.
Yes. Good evening, everybody. I have a lot of announcements. I'm going to go through these really quick. As you know, there's a meet with the council member on Fridays from 1:30 to 5:30 p.m., and that's at the Liberal Center. Set up appointments with Stephanie Sanchez. If you need to write down her email address, it's ssanchez@sandiego.gov. So if you're interested, if you have any concerns, you can always meet with the council member, Andy Foster III. Funding for the Black Cultural Arts District is at $850,000 from Congress Ed Vargas. Parks and Recreation Creepy Thursday. I have some flyers for those, particularly the youngsters that may want to come out for Creepy Thursday. So I'll pass them down. Maybe I'll just pass them. And then on the other side, I had dinner with the... Last month, Small Business Spotlight, the Mental Bar, is celebrating its second year anniversary. It is a family-owned business located in the heart of the Black Arts Culture District. Congratulations to Tommy and Danielle Walker. If you have budget concerns, send those concerns to Tiffany Harrison, and that would be tharrison@sandiego.gov. Now, I don't know if you know this, but San Diego Police Department investigates SMS towing. San Diego Police Department is now investigating alleged illegal practices by SMS towing. If you have a complaint, please contact the Police Department's Traffic Special Investigations Unit. And the email address is towingfraud, R-E-O-R-T, at pd.sandiego.gov. Finally, your participation is needed. Join the City of San Diego Planning Group, Cholla Valley, Skyline, Paradise Hills, Eastern Area, and Southeastern Planning Groups officially advise the City of San Diego on land use policy. Look at the CD4 website for more information. And finally, I have some newsletters you can pass those on. I didn't anticipate this large crowd. Pass those down. And there is a family fun day, the Harvey Family Foundation. That's going to take place Sunday, October the 20th, from 12 to 5 p.m. At the YMCA. I think it will be a beautiful time. Just pass this over and take a look at it. And I think that covers it. That's it.
Okay, Any questions for Council District 4? Thank you. And I know Lizzie is off, she's out of town at the moment, but is anyone here to represent Council District 8? Council District 8? No? Okay. Do we have, is Representative here? Do we have someone from Elk Corner? Yes.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. For the money, we rep for Council President Shawnee Lou Rivera's office. Thank you for being here tonight. I have a couple announcements. I don't want to be near trash. The first is we have announced a price transparency ordinance. The City of San Diego has announced that, and the Council President has been spearheading that. Basically would allow grocery stores to adopt digital coupons and without. That's something that he partnered up with Council Member Vaughn Wolfer. As we know, the price of groceries way too damn high, right? For seniors and other folks that don't speak English, it's very hard to get any sort of digital coupon. 63% of seniors actually don't use a cellular device in the United States. So we're trying to make it easier and more accessible for our seniors to get fair grocery prices at the grocery store, and so that's an ordinance that we've been introducing. Happy to elaborate that a little more after the fact.
A couple other things. 32nd Street in the Stockton area will be getting completely repaved. That is thanks to our projects and actually advocating for that to be repaved. So stay tuned for that. We've got a lot of traffic safety wins in Stockton. On 31st and Market, they're putting a new school light, a school traffic light. So that is going to be newly installed and actually provide more pedestrian safety for residents and seniors and youth alike that attend King Charles, which is on 32nd. And then lastly, if you have any concerns about any potholes, encampments, etc., please forward that. If it's in Council District 9, please forward that to me. Happy to support in that. And again, really want to emphasize using the Good Time Report. Look, I'll be the first to tell you, it's frustrating. Sometimes it doesn't get it done, all right? We all know that. But we have to utilize that, and I say that because the city is actually using data from Get It Done to prioritize certain things, right? And we know a lot of our marginalized communities don't use Get It Done, don't know how to use Get It Done, right? And so what happens is, you know, we've got other folks in other districts that are actually reporting it more, right? And then in District 9, District 8, District 4, right, there's not a lot of reporting, and so therefore the city thinks there's no problems. We know that also. There is plenty of problems in all those districts. So please continue using the Get It Done. If you don't know how to use it, feel free to reach out to our office. I know District 4 does a good job as well, and District 8. So don't get discouraged. It does work. Trust me, I've used it. It does get it done. But that's the emphasis I want to drive home. Yeah, and that's it. I think Reggie has a question.
I live in the city, but across the street is the freeway, but in between there, somebody's throwing tires and trash. I put it on Get It Done, and there's been no response yet.
You know if it's on Caltrans or city side?
I think that it's the Caltrans or the state.
Yeah, we're happy to connect with Sam Gonzalez, who's our state rep here, and we've been in coordination with a lot of state issues, so I'll connect with him on that specific inquiry. Anything else? Any questions?
Questions from the board? Thanks for that, John. Is there Lucero here or anyone from the mayor's office? Give a report. Okay. From the office of Chairwoman Nora Vargas.
Hi everyone, my name is Jennifer Lawrence. I'm first on the board for the community base review. I mostly cover southeastern areas, mostly focusing on that whole development view. And so today what I have is just basic county resources that we offer, which is education, transportation, and health. And also we have vacancies open for boards and commissions, so if you're interested in joining any boards and commissions, to help inform the board supervisors on how they can have best practices in informing and providing services more to the community, you can just connect with me. I have cards in the bag, and I'll wait for you and take it in the meeting to have a communication conversation with you. So thank you all.
Thanks for being here. Do I have anyone here from Senator Steve Diaz's office?
Do we have anyone from Congressman Juan Vargas? Nope. Assemblymember
Dr. Akilah Weber is coming up
here. Hi, everyone. Good evening. It's been a while. My name is Sam Gonzalez, field rep for Assemblymember Akilah Weber. For those that don't know, Assemblymember District 79 covers La Mesa, McCollum, parts of D9 and D4 San Diego, Spring Valley. I said that. It's a pretty large area, pretty much eastern San Diego County area. The only big update I have for the Southeastern group is the turkey giveaway right over there. You're holding the flag, yeah. Thank you. Our next event will be November 23rd. That's our final turkey giveaway of the year. Sorry, last district event of the year, which will be turkey giveaway. November 23rd from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's free for everyone in Assembly District 79 and the public. Go ahead and grab a flyer. I left my business card in there as well if you need help RSVPing. The RSVP does not guarantee a turkey. It just lets us know that you're coming. Again, it's pretty much a free event for everyone, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. It'll be at Turkey Elementary School. That's in City Heights. Any questions on that? And as well, and as mentioned earlier, I'm also your representative for state-related matters. Is there any questions or comments related to the state that I can take now? Even if I can't answer it now, I can come back and follow up with you guys later. Just a quick point. Go ahead.
Hi, So you work with Caltrans in terms of the homeless encampments in the Caltrans area?
I don't work with Caltrans, but I work with Caltrans.
Yes.
So does Caltrans do any proactive cleanups that's supposed to be going to call up to report in a particular area that needs cleaned up?
Yeah, so discussions with Caltrans are pretty interesting because, like you guys may be aware, there's many encampments throughout the 805, the 15, pretty much San Antonio. In my conversation with Caltrans, they have expressed to me that they are fully aware of the encampments. They know exactly how many people, how many stuff, how much time they've been there. They're working with CHP, local city enforcement, and nonprofits to make sure that the individuals there are safely housed before abatement can occur. And it is a slow process. We don't have a timeline, but we know that they actively circulate the county. Because District 11 of Caltrans is not just San Diego County, but it's a bigger portion. So that's my response to you at the moment.
But I thought the new law was that you weren't going to wait until folks had housing before you cleaned out the encampments.
Well, not.
The Supreme Court opened.
I mean, yeah, I'm not sure which law you were referring to.
California would hold funding to cities and other local governments that do not remove encampments.
I know that the governor issued an executive order allowing local city jurisdictions to fully coordinate with state and city departments to ensure that the encampment abatements occur faster. Mm-hmm. I don't know how closely the city and counties are working on that. I don't know if they're embracing the executive order. It's not necessarily a law that has to be followed. It's just more like a guidance from my understanding.
No, but I'm just talking about Caltrans, not working with the county, just on Caltrans property by itself.
Well, go ahead, sorry.
That should be a pretty simple process because if Caltrans is a state agency and the executive order tells the state agency to do the cleanup immediately, right?
You're right, yes. However, when we talk to Caltrans about this issue, and one of the things that stops them from going in and doing it is that there's individuals in the area that may or may not be a threat to workers, and these are state workers, and so they're entitled to state rights and protection, so that's why state needs to be present, and that's why there's a whole very slow procedure to make sure that these people are safely removed, whether that be into homes or some safe shelter or just some other option before abatement can continue. But if there's individuals present, from my understanding, it is unlikely that Caltrans will just go in and clean up, because then there might be a fight between the two, and we don't want the lawsuit or anything.
Do you think you guys could invite a Caltrans to do a presentation right here at the planning group?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. I'm more than happy to forward the invitation.
Yeah, so they have the same questions to Logan Heights about the freeways, because they are Caltrans properties. Mm-hmm. Pretty much all freeways in the state are Caltrans properties, and the surrounding areas next to them, so on. It would be great just to have a conversation with Caltrans to just get more clarification on how they're going to update like this executive order.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think Caltrans would benefit greatly from more face-to-face interaction. Unfortunately, they don't have a community representative like we do, which is one of the reasons why they don't have a lot of presence. So we're the next best thing, but I'll go ahead and forward that. I echo that sentiment as well. We want them out here.
Sam, is there maybe a way you could facilitate just a special... not even necessarily a presentation, but just having someone from Caltrans here for a meeting to just be on the agenda and answer some questions, just generally, kind of, this is what they do, this is their jurisdiction, these are the things they're focused on. Is that something maybe you could help?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm more than happy to forward the question and try to get someone from out, at least to this planning group. I did want to mention briefly that due to some transitioning in the offices, you know, there may be a period of time where you don't hear from me. So as of right now, officially November 22nd is, I guess, my expiration date. And then, you know, moving forward next year, you'll have some new reps. But assuming I'm still in field, more than happy to work with you guys and coordinate that. But if for whatever reason the next rep isn't me, you can forward that request as well and make that demand.
Perfect. Okay. We'll try and do that. Maybe not in the November meeting. Typically we're docked in December, so maybe early next year. But we'll try and get Caltrans here to see if we can just get a broader conversation going.
Any questions? Any follow-ups? Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Sam.
Thank you.
Do we have anyone here from Assemblymember David Alvarez? His office now? Okay, so anyone. Do we have anyone from the Central Division Police Department or the Southeastern Division Police Department? No. Okay. Are there any members of local organizations who would like to talk about updates with their... Oh, I'm sorry, sir. Yes. Who are you representing?
Yeah. Apologies. My name is David Huerta. I'm with the Office of Counselor in Moreno. And I'm a new face here. Lizzie is currently, she's on a little vacation, but she wanted me to stop by and give some updates on her path. Here. So the Logan Heights, planning department is going to be coming to do a presentation here at the Southeastern Planning Group on the development of Alpha Street and 40th Street, which is across from the South Crest Rec Center. I know there's been some questions about what's exactly going on there, so she's going to bring them out to talk a little bit more about that. And then there's going to be the South Crest Rec Center. There's going to be a free Halloween carnival on the 23rd of this month. The Memorial Rec Center is going to have a free Halloween carnival as well. That one's going to be on the 25th. There's a police captain's meeting on the 31st of October, and that's going to be at 6 p.m. There's a Day of the Dead celebration that's coming up at Sherman Heights as well. That's going on currently until November. And there's also going to be a town hall. The town hall is going to be November 13th at 7 p.m. It's going to be at the Our Lady of Guadalupe Church, so kind of close to Barrio Logan. So we want all of you guys to come out. The council member is going to be there. All of our team's going to be there. I think there's going to be some refreshments as well. So we'd love to hear from the community, right? We're going to give a lot of different updates as to what's exactly going on, but also we want to know what kind of questions you guys want answered. We want to hear from our community, and we love always hearing and being able to provide input. Any questions?
Any questions for Council District 8? Can you see from the board?
What was your name again, sir?
David Ford.
David Ford. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I normally cover the Fire Low community. So.
Thank you, David, for coming.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyone from any community organizations that would like to speak?
I guess I'll give you a quick announcement. We do have our monthly food distribution this Friday at Logan Heights CDC, 3040 Imperial Avenue. So feel free to let people you know about the food distribution. It's free, no questions asked. Just get in line, get some free vegetables and fruits. We also have a small business resource fair on Thursday at the Logan Heights Library. That one will be... Actually, I don't have the time already. I'm sorry, I won't say the time because I don't know correctly, but it will be on Thursday at the Lowen Heights Library. This will be over 4 to 7. All right, thank you, appreciate it. And there's going to be over 25 what we call flash presentations, or really short presentations by other small business advisors. So if you have a small business, or you know anybody with a small business, feel free to go there. It's a free event as well, and it's this Thursday at the Lowen Heights Library. Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on to the chair's report. I don't really have anything specific, but I will jump in on another agenda item. We'll kind of just deter that one for a minute. And then last, under this this item, I'd just like to talk about the Community Planning Committee. And so their next meeting is Tuesday, I believe, which is the 22nd. I'm not sure yet if that is going to be hybrid in person or online. But the link is right here, so I would just encourage the community to be able to see that, as well as the board members as well. Moving on to item 5, we're going to move into our informational items. So the first informational item that we have this evening is on Measure B. This is the trash and recycling cost of service study. And presenting, we have Ada Castaneda.
Please take the lead.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Hello, everybody. Good afternoon. My name is Aida Castaneda, and I serve as one of the consultants on the Measure B Community Outreach Project. Many of you all remember Measure B passing in 2022. So we're going to be going through a few different phases in this project, and I wanted to offer some context as to where we are and where we're going. I do have a presentation to show folks. I understand that we don't have much of a screen here today, but I will indulge you with my small computer here. I will offer the Madam Chair the presentation, so folks can also look at it on their phones whenever. I'm sure you have the presentation already. I don't know.
I did receive it, yes.
Okay,
I can actually post it on the website.
Perfect. So we'll be sure to follow that through so that you guys can see all that, all the information that's coming up. I know it's a little bit of a short, of a small print, but we're here to facilitate. If you want to see up close, you're welcome to check out the presentation as I conclude here. So really the process of how we're going to endure this new project is in various phases. The first phase is the cost of service study is what we're talking about at the moment. Okay, I want to talk about Measure B for a little bit. So Measure B was passed by the City of San Diego and its voters in 2022. Ultimately, it allows a review of trash collection services and fees. Potential fees for enhancement, of course, based on public input, and also the city may begin charging single-family homes for the collection of trash. So the cost of service study will determine a few things. This will determine a baseline cost analysis for single-family homes and the collection of those services. Also talks about additional solid waste services based on public input is what we're doing here today. We're also going to be determining a fee structure, which could capture all part or none of the costs, and we'll get into that in a little bit. Also an investigation of discount programs for low-income residents and other parameters that may allow us more incentives for homes that may need the extra discounts as we move through this potential fee. So I want to talk about who will be impacted and who already pays. Many people in this room already actually pay, right? So who is potentially impacted? We're talking about single-family households, or renters of those homes, or properties with four or less units. Now, who already pays? Who already pays are condos, apartments, more than four unit residents, and also local businesses. Many of you remember, this was championed by Councilmember Sean Hilo Rivera that really talked about making sure that we bring equity throughout the city of San Diego and how we are determining the fee to collect trash collection. So it was an opportunity for us to really set the basis and how we can determine how we can also expand different resources throughout the city for those that don't currently pay. And also it was a repeal of the People's Ordinance that was put into our books, I believe almost 100 years ago. So we're definitely going through some reform throughout the city of San Diego. So potential enhancement services, we're talking about trash pin provisions and replacements at no additional cost. We're looking to increase recycling collection. I came to realize this, I actually live in the city of Nashville City, and they pick up recycling every week. I came to find out the city of San Diego collects it every other week. I think it's important for us to also feel free to compare to other cities, right, and how best we want to meet those programs here in the city of San Diego. So I encourage folks to also be sure to voice that concern when we talk about how we can best do that with the surveys that we're conducting throughout these next couple of months into the new year. Okay, so really the opportunity that we have here is to free up the general fund. And it's talking about a few different things here, right? We're talking about a $60 to $80 million of potential public services that can be offered through this new incentive. Funds redirecting to parks, public safety, libraries, homeless strategies, and other street repairs. It's really an opportunity to expand what is likely to be enhanced around the city of San Diego, and we believe that Measure B offers us that opportunity. Okay, so this is the timeline that I was referring to, and we have quite a long ways to determine what this is going to, how this is going to look like. The cost will not be implemented until 2026. So I know that the idea of paying more, especially with our families that are already being stretched out thin, is also a reminder that we have some time to figure this out for us, but also to determine the different parameters that are going to be put in place to protect single-family homes, but also families that are of low income. So we are first starting off with the summer, summer 2024, that's coming on, right? But we're still in this phase. The cost of service study begins, and that's what we're conducting tonight until the remainder of the year. By early 2025, the findings of the study will be presented to the City Council. Now, we also endure a 45 public comment period, and I'll get into that in a little bit. The 45 day period, basically what that says is that the public writ large has an opportunity to contest the cost. And ultimately, the city has the members of the community have the opportunity to contest the cost, to which subjects us to a 45-day public comment period. We then go into the council considers fee schedule by the summer of 2025, and then until the summer 2026 is when the rollout of the services, if approved, because we live in a democracy, so it has to be approved, by the city council. Okay, so the public engagement process, we're trying to be as holistic as possible, but also as impactful as possible. We're conducting about 27 in-person public meetings, of when this is one, of course. Three each council district throughout the summer, the fall, and the spring. We'll also be conducting three virtual meetings, also having translation services available to folks that need that translation service. And then another outreach that we're conducting is these questionnaires that I will be talking about very soon, and I'd like folks to scan the QR code and participate so that we can have an extensive and a comprehensive outlook on the cost of study service that the city of San Diego and its council members will ultimately vote. Of course, we're doing social media, pop-up groups, and a lot of different other projects. Okay, so how does one provide feedback? They provide feedback by having this discourse right now, right? So although I'm giving a presentation, I welcome questions so that we can have a dialogue. This is meant to be conversational. We're also having focus groups. Members of this, maybe folks in this room, have taken part in those conversations. We have pop-up events, community presentations. We also have opportunities for folks to email the city. We have a city website, of course, and then the questionnaire that I'm asking folks to please participate in. Okay? So the cost of service outcomes, I want to make sure that I emphasize a couple of these things. The city cannot charge residents more than the actual cost of the service. Recommendations to the city council, then to the council members will ultimately decide if a fee is going to be adopted, not to adopt the fee, or to adopt a portion of said fee. So we have to go through a few different hurdles to actually justify the city's charging its constituency a fee, and they're only charging from what that service is actually paid for normally. Okay, so this 45 waiting period that I mentioned before, this is just for the sake of our process and how one can contest its governance, because that's also all part of our democracy. Of course, 45-day waiting period, postage mailed out to single-family homes. So all single-family homes will receive a mailer about what this new study will be about and how much it's going to cost. Homeowners will have 45 days to respond if it is that they're going to oppose the fee. If opposition exceeds 50%, a fee will not be implemented. So that's just a provision that I like to mention to folks so that we understand how dynamic this process is really and how it plays out. Okay, so the next step. Just spread this information far and wide. I also brought some a fact sheet really on how we got here. But this is really the QR code that I'm asking folks to scan on their phones so that they can best share their questions or their concern and their feedback about how they would best like to see the trash collection service roll out in the next couple of years. So I have some leaflets here that you're welcome to check out. All these different QR codes, you can find our open houses, request for translation, and of course complete the very handy-dandy questionnaire that I'm really asking folks to check out. You're welcome to visit our website, and also feel free to also email the City of San Diego and the Environmental Services, who will be conducting the duration of this study. Okay, this one. I know, it is a lot of information.
Can you have that one?
Yes, sir. So I thank you for the opportunity to address the members of the planning group. I thank you all for your attention. I'm happy to take in any questions, comments, concerns. I know it's never an ideal situation to have to pay more when we're already spread very thin. But this is kind of the series of conversations that we're having at this moment. So there's plenty of information here if you'd like to scan it, and I'm open to questions. But that's concludes my presentation. Yes?
Do you know how much the city paid for the consultation services?
I do not know. I don't have that at the top of my head. I can tell you that these kinds of services are up for an RFP, so there's a variety of different consulting firms that decide to apply. I welcome you to check out the procurement department, and you can have a better idea of how much that looks like. I'm one member of a comprehensive team. So I know that the city hired a few consultants on just one of a couple.
And do you know how much the city proposing to charge that would cover the cost for the service?
No, this is why the questionnaire is so important.
No, but I mean, the city should already have a sense of how much it's going to cost them to provide the service. So do they have that number?
I do not have that number. Right.
Good question.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry. Do you know how many households this would be affecting in the city of San Diego?
I don't have a fixed number for you, but I can figure that out.
You know, I assume you just take the $80 million and divide it by the number of households you're going to start charging. Right?
Well, it's an estimated number. So it's the likelihood is that this is what it has cost the city of San Diego for the last, 100 years to pay for trash collection services in single family homes. So the projection is around that number. It's not a fixed number that I can determine at this moment, but it's a range.
Got another question, I'm sorry.
Yep.
In the scenario where not 50% oppose it, are you going to bid it out to multiple different trash companies, or is it going to stay with waste management, or how does that work?
You know, it's not something that I'm responsible for, but I'm assuming that there will be an open process as to who would take up the particular contract, but that would be a question for the department itself, but it seems like something that they would essentially do.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I remember when I first got home in 99, one of the benefits of paying taxes every year was the collection of trash.
Correct.
Okay, so now what I'm hearing about this going up is, and my taxes been going up every year too. Okay, so now I'm paying taxes, but they're not covering my trash pickup.
Well, they are currently, and you won't be subjected to this until 2026. So at the moment, mm-hmm. they're still paying for your trash.
What's going to eliminate that from happening? What's going to cancel that out?
Well, it already canceled it out, right? So my
taxes are going down, is what you're saying?
No, so when Measure B was passed, the idea was to revoke the people's ordinance so that the city would no longer have to pay for people's trash. So that happened in 2022, right? So there's nothing that's going to change in regards to your taxes other than the city will subject you to a new fee and then picking up your trash. Mind you, you're encouraged to reach out to your council members to voice your concerns, and I welcome you to join us at City Council when it's presented.
I'll be there.
Good.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
So what is the city going to give the residents for this new process? Like, right now they charge to dump, you go through the dump, you just do grass or greenery. What about bulky items?
Yeah.
What about electronics?
Yeah.
We have a new brown bin or something.
Yeah.
But it definitely, especially with the bulky items, is there anything that you're going to entice the community? Like, hey, we're doing this, we're going to give you some extra services.
Well, that's the incentive, or at least rather, that's the purpose of the questionnaire that we're asking folks to fill out, right? I think the objective here is to figure out what the initial needs are. So if it is a bulky item, if it's the electronics, have that be a part of your responses in the questionnaire, and the city will ultimately determine how that will be fixed into the overall rates, assuming that's something that they can adjust to. But I know that some council members have popped up their own different dumpster events throughout the district, and I'm assuming that will continue until things change. But I know that that's something that they're trying to incorporate if this fee structure is developed. So I encourage you to ask that very question so that they can give you a better answer.
So what about getting a discount at the dump? Right now the dump fees are going up like $180. Since we're paying customers now. Not yet.
Well, when you say the dump, what you refer, I know it's, you can give me some context. Are these private companies that you're going to drop off?
I'm talking about the city dump. City.
Okay.
So right now, if you have a load or something, you'd be bringing it. If you had shrubbery or whatever, you'd be bringing. Now it's almost $70.
You know, there's a lot of questions around how this is going to roll out, and all I can really offer you is the questionnaire so that you can give us your feedback, and the city will ultimately determine how that's going to play out. But please feel free to offer that feedback, because if that's an additional cost that people are being subjected to, the city needs to be well aware of how it's going to impact people at large. So please offer that as a point of information, because that may offer them an opportunity to reduce the cost of what is expected to roll out after this case study. Does that make sense? Yes, sir. The QR code is there for the questionnaire. It's very straightforward. There's a lot of questions where you can have free range and write whatever you like. But it's a pretty straightforward questionnaire. Okay. Any other questions?
Ava, yes. Is there an opportunity for you to come back in maybe like 2025 once this is started to not roll out, but just so we understand how the questionnaire is coming back and we can understand what the actual proposal is tentatively? Because at this point, like, I realize the intent is to get the community feedback, but there's a lot of questions here that you can't answer. How much is this going to be? Is there a discount for the dump? Is there just, like, so it would just be great if we could kind of get on your radar for maybe,
sure,
like,
course,
the middle of 2025 to just kind of say, here's an update, here's what the city might be thinking of at this point. And maybe at that point, I understand that you would just be providing information that maybe we could actually make that an action item on our end.
Totally.
And provide some feedback to the board.
And like I mentioned before, right, the process is going to take some time to roll out, and you also have your council members within district, within the parameters of District 9 and District 8 to also share those same concerns, because they will ultimately be the ones voting on this item.
Right.
Okay. Wonderful.
Okay. Any last
questions? I have one question. Not sure if you might have the answer or not.
Okay.
Subsidy. You know, you talk about residents. You're in this community where low income. Do you know anything about subsidy that will help out the residents that will need that program?
What do you mean by subsidy? I mean,
low income.
Right. Well, yeah, the objective is to recognize the fact that we do have low-income families. We have communities that are when folks have a fixed income, or you have people that are retired or Social Security recipients. So the idea is that in recognizing that there's going to be that need, the city will ultimately adjust and have rates for low-income families that are unable to pay whatever fee is ultimately scheduled out.
So right now, nothing really in the talk about it. It's just a...
No,
well, we're in the area, a conversation.
They're talking about it, but that's why it's important for us to do the survey so that we get a better idea. Mind you, they're well aware that we have districts that are going to need that extra assistance. So like I mentioned in the presentation, that is a part of this overall fee structure, is to consider low-income families and people that aren't a fixed income by Social Security. Yeah.
Thank you. I think we have one more question from the audience.
I wasn't real clear. Maybe you answered this already.
Okay,
so you're saying that, so right now some portion of our tax dollars go towards paying for trash collection, right?
No, the city of San Diego pays your trash collection at the moment.
Well,
the
city of San Diego operates through taxes, right? So theoretically, my taxes is paid for that trash.
All kinds of taxes.
So what happens with that portion that I'm paying for the trash collection, right? Once I'm paying an independent amount for the same trash collection.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just redirected to other places, right? And the city of San Diego is one entity, and then your taxes also go to the county, right? So it's a various streams of revenue that goes to all kinds of different directions. So in theory, it will be redirected to this particular service. Like I mentioned before, the city is not going to charge you any more than the cost of service to pick up the trash.
So, and then the other part of this was, suppose we vote not to have this, what happens then?
Well, the fee doesn't go into effect. So that's what the 45-day period is echoing.
Why are they going to still collect the trash?
Well, they would be required to,
But it ultimately is up to the city council. So you would give your input to the city council members, and they're the ones that are going to vote on what the cost would be. So that's why it's imperative that everyone, say their piece and put in their input, so that your council member and the whole community or the city council members knows the issues.
Okay, Ada, thank you very much.
Thank you
so much. Appreciate your patience and your attention. Thank you.
Great, thank you. So next up, we have the City of San Diego and Community Housing Works. They're going to talk about the disposition and development agreement for a site located at 40th and Alpha Streets. And we have Steve.
Hi, good evening, everyone. My name is Steve Swiezicki. I'm joined by my colleague, Pablo Estrada. We are here from Community Housing Works. We are a nonprofit affordable housing developer based here in San Diego. We're here this evening to talk to you about disposition of a piece of land currently owned by the City of San Diego being purchased by Community Housing Works that will ultimately develop, with 92 new affordable housing units. It will be delivered. The project is located at the northwestern intersection of 40th and Alpha Street, so just a bit south of here. And it encompasses about half an acre of land that is non-contiguous, and will not only contain affordable housing units, but in its current rendition will also include an affordable daycare center that will be accessible to members of that community and the greater community at large. Community Housing Works is a 36-year-old nonprofit developer. We've been doing this for some time. We own approximately 51 units throughout California and Texas. Most notably, you may recognize our most recent development on Keeler Court, which is about at the intersection of 43rd and Alpha Street, not too far from the current development site that I'm talking about today. Keeler Court is a 71-unit family project that not only created some affordable units for the neighborhood, but also created some extensive transportation and infrastructure improvements along Alpha Street. The project was completed about 2 years ago, and it's operational and doing very well. We have a strong familiarity with the Southcrest neighborhood. We also own two other projects. One is called Mayberry, not too far from here, as well as Las Serenas. And forgive me for not having something a little bit larger today to put up on screen, but we are going to offer the opportunity to do something online or come back at a later point just to show you something that's a little bit more deeply effective in portraying the project. And so, without graphics, it becomes a little bit difficult, but I'm here today to maybe open this up for some questions about the project itself and, you know, what we're intending to do.
Can you talk a little bit about, it's all affordable housing, correct, and all below certain area median income?
That's correct. The project itself will contain a mixture of 1 and 2 bedroom units. The affordabilities will range between 30% and upwards of 60% of area median income for San Diego County, based on the family size.
And how much parking is going to be on site?
Currently, we have a fairly reduced amount of parking. This isn't a transit priority area, so we have about 22 spaces. However, we are working on some assemblages of some neighboring lots to actually see if we can actually accommodate some additional parking on the project.
And I just want to highlight this is an informational item coming to us. So at this point, I'm going to open it up to the public and see if there's any public comments. Yes, sir, in the back.
So there's no kind of secure garages or nowhere to store your car or your, like a garage or anything secure? Storage items?
The larger project site, there's two sites on this, and they are separated. It will have a podium garage structure that will be secured, and it will likely have some type of encompassing storage units within it, if the units aren't actually within the units themselves, if those storage units aren't inside the units themselves.
What about laundry hookups?
Laundry hookups, the units will not have laundry specifically. They'll have laundry rooms, not hookups in the units.
What about AC?
Air conditioning is something that can be brought on by the tenants themselves.
So, talking about the windows?
Wall units, yeah. Window units.
So, what kind of heat units?
There's actually internal heating, so the units do have wall mounted units inside, so central heaters, yes.
Y'all mentioned there were affordable units?
That's right, 100%.
Then build it.
Okay.
Yes. No, I did have a question. The community is impacted by a lack of parking. We build these towers, which are housing people, but then they got to walk 2 miles to get to their vehicles. And so to me, I think what needs to be inherent in these plans is a parking agenda, a parking facility. It can't be an afterthought because the residents who live here are severely impacted by that. And I think you didn't really express that wholeheartedly in your statements.
Well, the city of San Diego has transit priority. You're with the city?
Yes.
Okay, the city of San Diego adopted transit priority areas about 2 years ago. Actually, it was a little bit longer than that. Those give us, give developers the option to have reduced parking standards on our projects to effectively try and build more homes than parking spots. It is a point of contention, I understand, and we're actually working with some neighboring lots to try and assemble that specifically for the purposes of parking itself. However, at this point, the project can only accommodate about 22 spaces effectively without becoming financially infeasible.
Okay, so just not to beat a dead horse, but how many units are you building for this one alpha site? How many units for people to vote with?
There's 92 units.
And there's only 22 parking spaces.
That's right.
I'm not trying to embarrass you. I'm just saying this is the kind of stuff that makes us pull our hair off because we're thinking, yeah, we want to house the community members. We want to make sure people have affordable housing. But if they're working and they gotta walk 2 miles to reach their vehicle, and I know that's the street, but I think we need to consider that.
I understand. There are 2 accessible bus options on 43rd and just north of the site as well. So it's far less than 2 miles. And these areas that were determined when the transit priority areas were outlined were encompassed that those bus stops were available to these specific locations.
So the lack of parking incentivizes the residents to take public transportation?
It can.
I was going to ask, based on your income thresholds, what would a typical 2-bedroom cost in this particular question?
At the higher end, no more than about $1,800 for a brand new 2-bedroom. At the lower end, it might be closer to about a little over $1,100. And the 1-bedrooms will also be lower. The lower a 1-bedroom at its lower end would be about a little over $800. Yes, sir.
So is this like any of the developments over here, like off of Imperial, Nursery used to be, I think it's 5 stories or something? How many stories is it?
There'll be 2 buildings because these are non-contiguous parcels. One will be 2 stories and the other will be 6. Yeah, the 6-story structure will contain the parking that we were referencing earlier. And that will have a whole level dedicated, a podium level dedicated just for parking. We're trying to work with the city to find more parking spaces on some right of ways that are located near the site.
So is the priority going to the folks already living in the community, or how are you prioritizing who gets to move into the units?
That's a good question. When we get to the point of where this is getting closer to being a reality, there will be affirmative marketing plans that actually focus on the surrounding areas of the property. Now, we can't say that somebody from North County couldn't move into the property itself, but the way it will be sort of postured, lists will be opened up and there'll be awareness sort of being made more locally through newspapers that we're required to advertise in, gazettes, online. So there's just things that sort of prioritize the local neighborhood first.
I have
a quick question.
Can you just, so these are 2
non-contiguous
parcels. Can you talk about what is separating
them, the far away they are from each other? Yes, for what it's worth here. And maybe show the public community a little bit more. So here's a rendering of what this looks like, and if you have glasses, more than happy to come around and show this to you a little bit later. This is actually, there's 2 privately owned pieces, 2 single family homes. I think they actually may be rentals, duplexes potentially, located on the in-betweens of this project site. So they're private ownership, and we're working with them to try and assemble that and bring it together. And again, if we can make that happen, that will be dedicated entirely to parking.
Other questions?
I have a question.
Yes.
Have you
I know what you're talking about. There's some elementary school where you're trying to build this.
I'm sorry,
have you saw any impact, what it's going to cost to that elementary school where when they go to school and come out of school, how busy it is?
In what sense? Maybe I'm not sure.
Traffic?
Traffic? Well, I think, you know, there's going to be traffic impact studies on the on the project itself as part of the EIR that we have to go through.
Well, I know, that's the whole scope of work, but that's why, as the representative was talking about parking, I think that's one of the biggest things of all there. Parking, how condensed it is with parking, just the scarce of parking, you gotta look for parking.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of tight. Then you got a school and a park right next to it.
Right.
How all that is gonna be impacted as well, too. Talking 92 units.
Yeah.
How many floors is this thing going to be?
One will be 6 stories, the other will be 2 stories. So, and the idea will be that, you know, individuals may not have cars, and it might be part of the verification for people to actually live there. We've done that and put that in place for other projects that we own.
But you know they're going to have more cars, right?
Yeah.
You know there's going to be more cars.
Well, we've, you know, the studies we've conducted internally have been doing this for some time. But that
here in this community? In this community.
Many of the communities throughout San Diego, that there's reduced parking, there's reduced cars amongst individuals living in affordable.
I don't know what community you're at, but mine has increased 10 times.
Okay.
And I live here. So when you say that, I'm asking a question. What community are you really looking at this at?
Well, North Park. Core urban areas that we work in. Yeah, so there's areas that we're focused on with our management, ConAm, that works specifically in the affordable housing field to ensure that residents are not taking on parking. And it's a part of their actual lease contract. If they take that on, they risk losing their unit. And getting a unit in an affordable project can actually be a lottery ticket for many people. So there's a lot of incentives for people to actually abide by that.
Okay.
Steve, can you talk about the next steps that you have and kind of where you're going next
with
this project?
Right. Well, we're in the early phases. At this point, we're just working with the city of San Diego on the actual disposition, which will likely be taking place by early December in front of City Council. And, you know, after that, we're going to be working very closely to assemble that financing that comes with it. It can take 2 or 3 years to do that at points, and then you actually have to get it out of the ground, and you actually have to build it. So this process, in many ways, can take, you know, between 2 to maybe 5 years. And so it's hard to actually pinpoint when it could actually come out and be actually operating.
Okay, and you're at basically, like, stage one.
Yeah, it's hardly born at this point. We're just here sort of announcing, you know, what our intent is and what the first steps are. Yes, Mr. Zinner, Jeff's from the city of San Diego.
Let me just introduce myself as opposed to just being the guy standing in the background. I'm with Civic Community, Civic San Diego, and we do work as a consultant to the city of San Diego, and we've been working with Steve on this project. And in terms of the process of going forward, you know, this is kind of the first step to come here and get your input on this project. Also, the council office has taken a very strong interest in this project, and we'd be definitely working closely to keep them informed of any progress. In terms of going forward, once we get with Steve and negotiate the terms of the development agreement that we're talking about, once we can get to that point, it would go forward to a city council committee, and it would be reviewed there first, and if that committee recommended it for approval, then it would go on to the full city council. And then if they approved it, we would have, you know, Steve would have an approved development agreement, at which point then he would be really moving forward on finalizing design, permits, and all those other things that will take a couple of years for this project to get moving forward.
Any other questions from the community? Any other questions from the board? No? Okay. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so moving on to item C, we have just Southeastern San Diego Community Plan for updates by myself and Jasmine, who's the secretary. So first of all, I just want to continue our asserting our need for outreach and website maintenance. it doesn't necessarily have to come from the board. If there's anyone from the community that wants to help us, you know, kind of maintain our website and help us with our outreach, that would be much appreciated. The second item is that our vice chair recently stepped down. So we do have an opening on the board. Looking everyone in the eyes on that one for the vice chair position. So it would be great if someone wanted to step up. And then last, as a board, we are actually at our minimum threshold of 10. And I believe our maximum is 14, right? So I just want to put it out to the community that we are soliciting members of the community to be part of the board. So if you live in one of the South Central San Diego communities, if you represent a business or a nonprofit or something that's within one of those communities, please reach out to myself, reach out to Jasmine, reach out to the city, and they can put you in touch with me. But we'd really like to get our board roster up a little bit. So, and that goes to the board members as well. If you guys know of anyone that would be interested, please, you know, just kind of facilitate and solicit on your own board as well. Do you want to add anything, Jasmine?
Maybe just going off of that, the commitment to be on the board is just we hope that you're able to make it to at least 10 meetings a year, so maybe one meeting a month. And the goal is just to be here and maybe give your opinion, like when people speak or if you have questions that will benefit the community, ask those questions.
Any questions from anyone in the community? Any of those items? Okay. All right. So I'm going to move us on to our action items. And the first item that we have is Rymark San Diego, the Capital Improvement Project Excellence. We have Thad Winkle here, who's the Deputy Director at Rymark San Diego. And he is looking for a letter of recommendation as well, which Dan, I'm going to let you talk, and then I will read the letter of recommendation into the record, which was also linked on the agenda. I'll pull that up.
Sounds good.
Go right ahead. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. My name is Thad. I'm the Deputy Director at Groundwork San Diego. Some of you might know about Groundwork. We've been around for 17 years. I joined about 7 or 8 months ago, so I'm probably a new face to most of you. I think it was back in August when we were, is that when we... First talked about the project. So back in August, the Community Planning Group Board approved 4 priority projects to send to the city leaders as being projects that they would like to see the city invest in here in southeastern San Diego. Groundwork had offered to put together just a basic survey that the board could use to help build community support. It's basically each project just says, do you support seeing this project in our community? And I wanted to come back today to report that we've had 88 respondents on the survey, which is very, we're super happy about it. We've, from my understanding in the past, helped with this and have gotten maybe like 10, 11, 12, maybe 15 responses, so 88 is excellent. A big thank you goes to Mr. Hill, who I know was doing a lot with getting folks to sign up. Some of you might have signed up through that, and we want to say thank you for that. And then also Amani Robinson, I know, had been doing a lot with the comedy show that she's promoting this in alignment with that. So just a reminder on the 4 projects, since there might be some people who weren't here in August. I want to make sure I get them correct. So the 4 projects that the board approved back in August were encouraging the city to invest in the rec center at Dennis D. Allen Park. This is a project that the city has given a little bit of funding to, and so the board has been encouraging people to say we want to see the city invest more fully in that project. Right around that project, there's also a trail, and if you go to our survey, we have sort of a map that shows this better than I would be able to explain it, but on Home Avenue, right now there's just an undeveloped site that everybody uses as a trail to get to the rec center in Dennis V. Allen Park, and so one of the other projects was to turn that into an actual trail to connect the communities on the north side of the 94 to those on the south. On National Avenue, in between the 5 and the 15, there's a big plot of land that's currently being used as a tow lot, and then on the other side of the creek, there's a junkyard, and this group said, in alignment with other community plans that have happened like 10 years ago, that people would like to see that become a community green space. And I am excited to say that we've been continuing to talk with city leaders about seeing that project move forward, and there is some traction. Obviously, these things, as we were just hearing with the affordable housing development, these things take forever, but it's exciting to hear that you know, Parks and Rec and different city leaders are at least open to saying, what would it look like to take over this property and turn it into a community green space. So that was the third project, and then the fourth one was seeing Ocean View Boulevard get greened up with trees and other sorts of vegetation in between 36th and 38th Street. And that's another one. Groundwork is actually doing a free tree program right now, and so we've been talking a lot with the city's urban forestry department, and I had mentioned that project to them, and they said, great, when we come to Mountain View, we want that information, and we want to try to get more trees in there. So we're here's hoping, obviously, you know, advocating and holding the city to it is the next step, but at least getting a positive first response was good. So I was here today because I had reached out to Amy and said, you know, it seemed like the next step is to let city leaders know that, you know, at this point we've had 88 people respond to the survey and say they want to see these projects. I think there might be a little bit of breakdown. Not everybody said yes to every single project, so we can get the exact numbers. But so I think the request today is to give Amy, on behalf of the board, to send letters to whether it's Councilmember Moreno or different, they call them asset managing departments, but that's like Department of Parks and Rec, oversees the parks, obviously. Stormwater oversees stuff that has to do, anything to do with the creek. So we want to let them know that this is a, these are community priorities as well. So,
excellent.
Yeah.
So the letter that that we have prepared is to Groundwork San Diego specifically, but they will then share it to the council members and the other council or the other city offices. So I'm just going to read the letter into the record, which again is linked directly onto the agenda. It just says, I'm writing as the chairperson of the Southeastern San Diego Community Planning Group regarding the proposed community green space around the Choyas Creek National Avenue between the I-5 and I-15 freeways. This project has been a long-standing aspiration for our community, with its roots tracing back over a decade. The 2013 National Avenue Corridor Master Plan first identified this site as an underutilized opportunity area in need of reimagination. Subsequently, the 2015 Southeastern San Diego Community Plan further emphasized its importance by listing the establishment of a new community park at this location as the top project under the public park and open space improvements. The CPG has recently reaffirmed the community's commitment to this project on July 8th, is one of us, 2024. Our group unanimously approved it as one of our four top priority capital improvement projects. This decision reflects the continued relevance and importance of this green space to our neighborhood, and since our July meeting, we have seen further evidence of community support. So far, 56, but it looks like we're now at 88-something. Okay. Community members have added their names in support of this project, representing a broader interest in this project. These individuals speak for many others who have long advocated for these types of enhancements in our community. The potential progress on this long-anticipated project is encouraging. This green space would address a recognized need in our community and align with established planning documents. Its development would represent a significant step towards fulfilling the vision laid out in our community plans and expressing and meeting the expressed desires of our residents. We look forward to seeing how this project develops and appreciate the attention it is receiving.
So that's addressing one of the projects, obviously,
yes.
The National
yes.
Avenue project. If I'm remembering correctly, it might have been a council member who said in order for us to keep engaging in conversation, she wanted to have something formal
yep.
from the planning group for that
yep.
one project.
Yep.
So I guess, you know, we could talk about the specific letter, but the ask is also to be able to say that these other three
yes.
projects are also
yes. which it does
important,
represent.
Yeah.
So
just sort of clarifying that detail.
Okay. And so I just want to open it up to the public if there's any public comments on anything, or if there's any questions for the board or for Thad in regards to the...
I got one.
Yes, yeah, please go ahead, Aaron.
Those are private properties that are owned by residents. What happens to... Are they forced out of their you know, not that it might be better for the community, but are they, how does that work financially? So?
In terms of the National Avenue project in particular?
Yeah.
Right now, the largest property, which is the tow lot, is owned by someone who lives in New York City, mm-hmm. and we had a call with them, and he was open to selling it.
So they buy it at market rate? Is that the idea?
Yeah, it's undevelopable because of its proximity to the creek, and so that helps in terms of the market rate. But, I mean, all of this is like, you know, the stars sort of having to align, so it's kind of inching forward.
I know the owner of the owner.
Pardon?
I know the owner.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah,
well, we'd love to talk. I mean, this is...
Well, I mean, that's why I'm wondering, like, does he get forced out of his place that he's had 20 years, or does he get paid accordingly, or how does that work for somebody like that, you know?
Right, I don't know. We would want to talk about it because we understand that, obviously, there's a lot of different folks involved. The goal is to see it be a community benefit for everybody. So
it would definitely be a benefit. Argument about
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
It's not screwing people on the way out.
Totally, like, yeah.
The balance between the two.
Yeah.
Well, this is, I would say, just the early stages of just supporting the larger project as well and trying to encourage the city to pursue something. Other public comments? Anything from the board? Okay. Is there a motion on the runner that I read into the record?
I'm motioning to have the vote.
Okay, is there a second?
I second.
Excellent, thanks, Ellen. All those in favor, raise their hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Excellent, okay. That motion passes.
I do have one other question. I don't know what is, you know, what you want to talk about with the board and you know, what just is sort of implied, but I think one of the other things that we'd be interested in doing is putting on the website, mm-hmm. the planning group's website, you know, that these are the four different projects that have been promoted, and this many people have supported each one as a way to sort of continue to build visibility around that. So I, again, wanted to raise it with the whole board.
You know, you guys have supported that. I don't think we necessarily need to vote or anything like that, but yeah, we can put an update, you know, on the website that just
for sure.
Of how many people have responded, and these are, you know, what the responses are. That would be great. So maybe we can just kind of chat offline about that later.
Sounds good.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being here tonight. Okay, so I'm going to move us to our next action item, which is 2664 L Street. And we have Waters here to present from Artifacts West.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Sorry we don't have a bigger board either. I'm going to have to ask you to use your imagination a little bit. But basically the project six single family townhomes. They're all sitting on one single family lot. So we're here in hopes that we can get through a map waiver process, which would allow every single townhome to be its own single family home for sale. Once you go through that map waiver process, somebody, a first-time homebuyer, can buy this home, you know, at a decent rate. So every one of these homes, except one, has a built-in ADU on the ground level as well. So the idea there is for homeowners to be able to offset their mortgage every month, and they can rent out this unit at the bottom and offset that. It's a 6,400 square foot lot, and there's parking off the alley in the back. There's diagonal parking in the front of the project that adds another 5 stalls. And currently, the project is complete. Just waiting for SDG&E to do their final part. These are some images of the...
Can you talk about more specifically what you need from us? So you're not necessarily looking for a recommendation for the project. You're just looking for a tentative map waiver, correct, in terms of...
Yeah, we need your support and approving that map waiver.
Okay.
Right, so these projects could be for sale. If it wasn't for that, they would all be considered one project.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And then they would have to be rental units. This would allow them to go for sale.
So map waiver is after they're built? It's not something that people have done before building?
We started the process in March of 22, I believe, and it's been excruciating.
Okay.
Are there any questions from the public? Yes,
sir. So, it's already been built or hasn't been built?
It's really
it's still completed,
yeah. Nobody in there yet.
What's the average cost for townhome?
So we're imagining when we designed them, the idea was for them to be at the average first-time homebuyers FHA loan. Mm-hmm. So basically, I think right now it's 800.
We as low-end ITDC were recognized as this community as one of the communities with the lowest home ownership rate in El Salvador. It is, I believe it's under 25% home ownership rate in that area, so you guys opening the door to first-time homeowners will be amazing. That would be great if you guys could prioritize maybe locals around the southeastern San Diego. Well, definitely incentivizing home ownership for first-time homeowners.
And I know that probably the 800 sounds like a big ticket, but you got to remember that there is an additional unit that's a part of your home that you can use to offset your mortgage paying off. That's the idea.
Other questions from the community? Yes.
So there's two units on one.
There's a single-family townhome, and then on the ground level of that townhome, there's a separate door into an accessory dwelling unit that you could rent out, or you could use as another bedroom, however you want to use it, but it's a legal unit for somebody else to rent from there.
So the primary unit is two bedrooms, two baths, and the ADU is
one bed, one bath.
Each of the units has an ADU.
All except for the one in the very front, and that's just due to setback regulations, stuff like that, that's unable to.
And they can't be sold separate from the unit.
No.
Correct. So even once they become condominiums, they are connected to the main house. Okay. Can you talk about parking?
Yeah, so I know that's a sensitive issue. So there's five stalls in the back of the project that are accessed from the alley. So all but one has a designated stall. But then in the frontage of the property, there's diagonal stalls instead of parallel parking. So you end up having five to six stalls that, belong to the frontage of the property. So even if you have people renting and you'd say, one per ADU and one per upstairs, there would still be right around 11 stalls for the property.
Okay. Other questions from the community?
I'm not sure. I'm not familiar with that site, but they're typical row homes. So they're about 20 feet wide, three stories tall, and have a little roof out there.
Let me see if you have any more comments. Is there any comments or questions from the board? No? petition to restore the Shelley Curtis White Field and the baseball field. And that's going to be presented by Mr. Bell, who is a board member but is currently now representing the Southeastern League.
And also a representative of the Shelley Curtis White Baseball Field.
Mr. Jebion, can you please come up here and give me a hand?
He's speaking to my Berkeley graduate, my grandson.
I'll throw that out there. it would be proud of the young man.
Yeah, he's really worked hard. Set up my trash. You know, get moving this one here a little bit. They said these up here. I do have big signs. Big. I want you guys to see.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is part of our legacy. This is, I want to show you.
You need somebody at home?
Here. Sit there. Now, my name is Dwayne Hill. I'm the executive representative for the Shelley Curtis White Baseball Field. And I'm also the general manager and public relationship officer for Southeast Little League Baseball. I want to share something with you that It's like an untold baseball story. Ever since Jackie Robinson, so what I want to explain is the historical significance that the Southeast Little League has in the Southeastern community and the community of San Diego. So ever since Jackie Robinson had broken the color barrier, you know, in baseball, hey, every kid of color wanted to play baseball. Baseball was the thing to do. Everybody wanted to be Jackie. Everybody wanted to be 42. But remember, that was 1947. 47, it was a segregation, racial segregation, in all across America. It was the heart of Jim Crow. Jim Crow had the white water faucet, had the black water faucet. You know, so Jackie endured a lot. And I compliment him because I would have quit a long time ago. You know. But Jackie had brought life and dreams to every color kid across America. And in San Diego, it was no different. It was segregation in Major League as it was segregation in youth baseball, youth sports, all over. Except for Logan Heights, Memorial Park. It was American League. If you look at your program, we have a package on the side of it. And you can pull out this one. Yeah. This is District 42. District 42. See, Mr. Greg Boston left, but he played Southeast Little League in 1957 before this year was set. Back then, it was District 33. You know, those guys were pretty tough. So when them kids got together at Memorial Park, you know, they had to compete for that spot, you know, if you made the team or you didn't. So a lot of kids did not make it. But they didn't go far. They stuck around because they wanted to watch the big boys. The next year, they still had the dream. They wanted to play baseball. All right. American League, if you look down here, went on and won victories and championships. Those guys were good playing baseball. And then the coaches came up with a grand idea because they didn't want to break the other kids' heart. In 1950, the Southeastern Civic Center had donated the land in Southwest Park to the city of San Diego. It was a big old dirt lot. And the coaches said, hey, why don't we go ahead and make another team and get that dirt lot down there? So what they did, they came up with an ingenious idea. The idea was to sell peanut brittle during the mid-50s for $1. Imagine that! $1 was like $100 bill back then. But the parents gladly paid that money because their parents wanted their kids to have what they were so much denied, was to play baseball, to integrate in American sports. So they paid that money, then the coaches and our parents and grandparents went over there and built that concession stand. That's why the city don't have no keys to it, only I got keys to it, and my president do. The city don't own that building. Because our parents and grandparents built that building down there. Our parents and grandparents built a fence, a baseball fence. And they put up a scoreboard. Meaning, if you look at it, the 1962 Edward Sharp. That's a book that you guys got. These guys won the championship. The mayor and everybody was glorious, man. So happy, you know. These guys was a team to be reckoned with. And then you got, look up this list again, 1967, Eric Overstreet. These guys, see, back then, it was a one-game elimination. You guys don't realize how hard it is to beat all the teams in your division. So I want to take you to inside your package, and look at this year's statistics. Because the Southeast Little League was here before all of these teams that we have in the Southeast. They didn't exist. Did they exist ever? They wasn't nowhere around. You know? So they had to beat all these teams just to get out to the division. The 42nd District was the biggest, largest district in all of San Diego. And the Southeast Little League was the biggest, most successful private program all along. We had up to, what, 15 major league teams. You know, everybody, a reputation, don't want to play Southeast. Not Southeast. Okay? And so we have a lot of historical significance with the southeastern Louisville until 2006. In 2006, someone ingenious decided, you know, to take down the Hawkins that our parents put up, take down the scoreboard, and make a multi-use field. Well, by them doing so, they said, well, we can get more net money and let other people use the field, and they took away from the Southeast Little League being able to practice, and when we haven't won a championship since, you know? And so I want to say, we have won more championships than any team in San Diego, and yet we don't have an exclusive baseball field. But there's more problems that happen when they had made it a multi-use field. So I want to take this out. This is how the field had looked before. If you guys want to see. Up here. And this is what it looks like now. Since we named it after Shelly Curtis White. Shelly Curtis White has already been, you know, adjourned into the city archives right here. If you look at this sheet right here. All eight councilmen signed this here. That means that he's an outstanding San Diego citizen that is honored enough to go into the archives for records of the city of San Diego. So he's already been established. We named the field after him. But since we named the field after him, it's such a glorious thing. We had so many merchants, sponsors, donors, and passionate volunteers to come out. And we build these bullpens, which is state-of-the-art pitcher mounds. Those, we got a sponsor, Patrick Sanchez, that played for Southeast Little League back in the 60s. He set up in Carlsbad in a big old state. But he come down here, and he gave us a state-of-the-art bullpen pitcher mound that only cost $6,000 to $8,000. We're the only one that has them. And we did this without 1 cent of the city money, the county money, or state money. It's all volunteer. And then, Southwest Park was a dark park. Very, very dark. So, our electrical brothers right over here, you know, the Electrical Workers Minority Caucus, gave us some floodlights around the building. And we had the CRR solar panel, motion detector, streetlights. You know, as you can see, along the walkway, and see all over here. And we also have someone that will donate us these shades. We have shades over all of the bleachers. Southwest Park ain't had no shades in 74 years. Since it's been built. So, you know, it's a beautiful thing when you see that our elders sit there alone every wall, and when they go around that side, they just smell and get a breath of fresh air, because it's so neat and so clean. It's beautiful when you see that the residents are kicking back on the bridges and congregating, because they wouldn't sit on a hot day, they'd be underneath a tree somewhere, trying to find some shade. But we bought that. Shelly bought that. Shelly bought that to the community. Now, we have been having a grievance since I've been there for 3 years. And it's been a nuisance. This is going to bring me to, if you look in here, in your package, we have a municipal hall. And before I play this, I think I bought some. It's this one here. It's this one. It's Municipal Code 5654. Before I play this, I want you guys to listen to something that my president, Cesar Lopez, had went on KUSI News 2 years ago. Unfortunately, we're not able to show you the screen video, but you can hear the audio. Right? Just bear with me for a moment.
Power on. Bluetooth connected.
Yeah. Mr. Hill, you're going to have about 3 or 4 more minutes to present today, and then we're going to move to the public and then the board comment.
Eastern Little League, Cesar Lopez, to get more details on how we all help out. We need grounds people out there to not only put them around, but as well as correct the fence issue. We have older fans on the dugouts, a lot of broken glass due to the adult sports activity there as well on the weekend. But we really need a lot of help resources just to make a good comeback.
Okay, I'm going to cut it off right there, Ed, because he said the key word right there, broken glass. Broken glass. If you look at the municipal code on there, 5654, it says that no alcohol beverages on any city property, beaches or parks. It has all the parks and all the beaches there without a special permit. If you look here, these guys got a gang of alcohol. And they've been bringing this alcohol onto our play area for years. For, like I said, 3 years. And, it's causing, you know, we are admin reporters. You know, so we are officers to keep our families and kids safe. And it's hard for us to do that when they are getting cut from wages because of the glass. And these cases of alcohol, they right on my field, on my face, lying right there. And we've been crying to the city for years, and nothing has been done. You know, it's taken away from our kids. Defense week practice. We don't have control on our opening day ceremony because every year the city of San Diego Black closes the field because of the holes and the crevices and the grass that they tear up, which causes our kids to break ankles, you know, sprain it because of the holes and stuff. But here's all the grass. Just the other week, because our fall season has started. See, we have put in a new home base. You see, that's my president right there. You see all that glass and stuff in his hands? You know, just imagine a kid trying to catch a ball, and the ball hits the pothole, and the kid got the glove in the right place. But the trajectory changed, and hit a smack in the face. This happened time and time over, because we don't have a baseball field. We are the only leagues that don't have a season baseball field. And we are the most successful ones. Now, here's the good news. We had pre-registered 165 kids paying all their registrations for free. All of their registrations being paid. And we bring in some new staff. And we are more deserving in the exclusive baseball field than any league because we are like the oldest, most successful in history. Shares that. You know, so we want you guys to support. We have a community support. How many community over here to support? Woo! And also, we have over 165 data. Here, look at this survey. All these people support. Open the first page, it says 164. And that's that. But we have a whole bunch of raw data right here that haven't been uploaded.
Okay.
This is a lot.
Mr.
So.
You're going to need to wrap up your
okay, I'm going to wrap up. In closing, we would like to, the Southeastern Planning Board to support the exclusive, the restoration of the Shelly Curtis White Baseball Field. Well, not only that, the Southwest Park. We want to do the whole park. You know, bring in some private investors and so forth, and make it an exclusive baseball field once again. That's all. Thank you.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read that into the record, and then I'm going to turn it over to public comments, okay? So this is, Dear Sir, Madam, we, the Southeastern San Diego Community Planning Group, support returning the Shelly Curtis White Baseball Field to its original exclusive baseball field status. This is not just to honor Mr. White's contribution, but also to preserve the rich history and tradition of the field and ensure the health and safety of the Southeastern Little League organization's youth players. Thank you. Okay.
Right.
I would like to speak about this item and support or propose things.
Yes, can I just ask a question?
Of course.
At the South Crest Recreation Center, how many public fields are there?
Excuse me.
How many public fields are there that can be used for sporting activities?
Well, actually, it's not a public field. It's southeastern Little League field. And so, but here's the future plan. It's just like I started before you
come in. Can you answer her question?
It's two. So here's the future plan. We want to set up, you see, adults use a whole football size for soccer. But kids only require, like these here, with these little space. So we have an area for where kids, we're going to put some artificial turf grass there under. So it costs $150,000. And we have some investors that can come in there and give us a set of our ball field. But first, it got to be an exclusive ball field, or they're not able to do it.
Is this a municipal field? This is owned by the city of San Diego, correct?
Yes, but it was our field. Every baseball league has their own field, except for us.
But it is owned by the city.
Yes,
it is a city field. Okay.
But not the building. The building is owned by our parents built the building. The
but
city
the,
don't
but
own
the building is also on the municipal field as well.
Yes, but they don't have no power authority over it.
I don't see how that's the case. I understand they don't have keys.
No, they don't have no power or authority because when the January 22nd flood happened, our roof was caved in. And they wouldn't touch that building. We had to get our union labor guys to come over there and do that. Anything that happens over there, we got to fix it.
Okay.
You see, the reason why is because our parents built it. They built that fence. They built the scoreboard. But they took it down. It was our field. They sold that candy for that. You know, so we want to finish what they started.
Okay. I'm going to turn back to the committee. Yes. I'm not sure
you answered
your question.
What you feel, can you just tell me, is it on city property?
The building that...
That the parents built, is it on city property?
Well, it was my understanding they purchased it. That's the data and research that I'm...
I believe the answer is yes. The city doesn't have access to the building, but it is on the municipal property.
Yes, it's on the
property. Okay. Are there other questions from the public? Yes, sir.
Why hasn't the city enforced its own rules in keeping those folks from drinking?
That was one of my questions as well. Have you approached the city? Have you talked
yes,
to the city?
Yes, we have been approaching the city for like, I said, since I've been there 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And our last address, I see it on like 4 CRG board members. And it's not, you know, the neighbors that slept in the apartments, they came down and said that those guys be up there like between 10 o'clock to the lights come on. They have access to the lights. And the soccer season never ends. It never ends.
What is the city doing to enforce their
rules? They're not doing nothing. So
no.
That's why we're going to take this to the top board.
Have you contacted the council member's office? Have you contacted the mayor's office?
Well,
I mean, this sounds like a municipal issue.
It's been going on way too long, and we've been losing a lot of good parents and families.
The council member is aware. Moreno, yes, her representative Lizzie is at the meeting, so they're aware of it, and we've been having these complaints. I'm one of the parents of the Little League children,
mm-hmm.
yes. So the council is aware.
And what have they said? They need to be enforcing their own rules.
Well, that's the issue. No one is. And they haven't been for years.
So another question, are there other exclusive use fields? Are you asking for something that is not otherwise like had in the city? I mean, all of the fields that I'm aware of are all multi-use. So are there other exclusive baseball fields?
Yes, it is. Yes,
Cantrell
has exclusive baseball fields.
Do they? They do grow?
Yeah. They don't have, it's not multi-use.
Okay, it's strictly a baseball field.
Strictly
baseball,
yeah.
Okay.
Off my
head. Yeah, and those require special permits, so we're going to move for that together.
Okay.
Yeah.
And these are fields that are fenced off, right? Like to make it a field, right? A baseball diamond, right?
Yeah. Right.
Are there other questions or comments from the public?
Yeah.
Yes.
Is anybody opposed to this?
Nope, not at all.
Nobody? You are?
I am opposed to it for the simple fact that in the South Crest area, that building, the rec center, was built in 1947. Since then, the area has grown with the number of people who live in it, but we don't have any more space to expand with anything. So my only concern is that that's all the kids have to use, and if you make it an exclusive baseball only, what about the kids who don't play baseball? That's my only concern.
What would they play?
They have Willie Henderson Park that's really close. Well, we're not talking about the kids. The kids are welcome. We're talking about the adults on the field.
The adults are the ones causing all the chaos. The adults are the only ones playing soccer. It's not kids. The adults are playing soccer.
Are there any other, like, so it's just youth baseball and adult soccer that is using this field? That's it?
Yes. We cannot practice like we used to. We used to have the field, so we got to get off our own field because they permitted the youth field. We got to get off our own field, you know. Okay. And so we cannot effectively get our kids in some practice and train them and get those repetitions to get a championship. We haven't had a championship since they had made a multiple youth field, you know. And we got a reputation of being the baddest, toughest team around, you know. And that's the legacy. So we it's time for us. I mean, the program was the mayor, George Keating, Leon Williams. Everyone was showed out in Southeast Louisiana. Warren Vargas, you see in there, he's a long time supporter. Norman Vargas, on our opening day, it was a big opening day. We had Norman Vargas, Vivian Marino, Assistant Chief Charlotte Terrence. You know, everyone was there. You know, we haven't had an opening day since Shelly Name has been on it. You know, it was so many people there. How many was there?
A lot.
Is there a comment or a question?
Reggie, is that you in the back? Do you have a comment or a question?
I'm Reggie Womack, and I was president over at Sunshine. We had the same issue way back in the early 80s, 70s. And the city is getting money from the soccer team. How much money is still being generated by your little league?
And see,
is your place generating money for the city? Because you have a building on there that nobody cares about except for us.
Right.
So in here, we can tear that down and put up a nice building, but they don't care about that. You need to come to something new.
I did not mention I have pre-registered 165 more kids, plus my 75 existing families. We're going to bring in a lot more revenue. A state-of-the-art ball field would bring in more revenue than any soccer team. We would give, and they would get 30%. You know,
we hear what you're saying, but you have to bring this to the table, to the city council, to City Parks and Rec and all these people.
Well, that's the next step.
A long road ahead.
Yeah.
And this is not really the venue for that.
Well, Bill, this is the first step to go before. This is the first step to go before the San Diego Park and Recreation Board. I already talked to Andy Hill. I talked to Todd Gloria. We got John Elo Rivera. We got Vivian Marino. And we got Henry Paulson as all support. So if they deny, we just go to the council.
Okay, I'm going to call this Reyes a little bit back in. Are there any other board comments? I actually have some comments, but I just want to see if there's any other board comments.
Question? I think there's a CIP project right now to redo the self-press rec center.
Yes.
Right? I feel like something like this
should be. So that's something that would include and be wrapped up in that. Okay. I have some reservations about turning this into an exclusive use field because that's not something that you can turn around. I'm really disappointed that the city is not adhering to their own rules, and I'd really like to hear back from the city before taking any kind of motion on that. But that's just my personal opinion. I understand that, I'm just saying I personally would like to hear the city respond to this and understand why they're not taking an action on it before I personally vote yes. I agree that this should be an exclusive use field. I would like some more information, but that's my personal opinion. That doesn't mean we're not taking an action, but it is something that we could delay if that's what we wanted to do. But it's up to the full board. Are there any other board comments or questions?
Are we able to vote on that as well? Yeah.
Of
course.
We just vote on all the other items.
Yeah, but I don't. I think you should probably recuse yourself as. Because you have a vested interest in this. So I don't know. I don't actually know the answer to that. Do you, Jasmine?
So I remember you had to bring something to the board that just excludes itself.
So close to.
Yeah, if you have a personal interest, vested interest, financial interest, it should be something that you recuse yourself from. So I would say on that, those grounds, Mr. Hill, you should probably recuse yourself. That's your decision. I can't make you do that, but by the fact that you're presenting and you are representing the Southeastern Little League, without you, we don't have a quorum, so we can't take a motion. So I guess what my suggestion would be then would be to just push this to the following meeting so that if we are able to have a quorum without you, then we can actually take a motion.
I could use this vote.
Because without Mr. Hill being...
Okay, I'm going to ask you guys. You guys are going to come back.
I am speaking. Without Mr. Hill voting, we don't have a quorum of the board. Because Mr. Hill has a personal and invested and potentially a financial interest in this, he needs to recuse himself for the board. Yes, sir.
So on the board, that's where you're trying to...
Yeah, the number.
The number.
Yeah, so if we had seven people here, then without Mr. Hill, we would still have a quorum at six. The issue is that we only have six. And so, yes, so if he is not able to vote, we only have five, and we can't vote on anything. Not just this, but we couldn't vote on anything that would be before.
Right now.
I'm sorry, what was that?
So you can take it may be four and one against, or all against and one.
No, but the issue is we have to have a minimum number of six eligible voters to be able to take action on anything. With Mr. Hill recusing himself from this item, that only leaves us with five board members left, which means we can't take action on anything.
It's not about an odd number or even number of members. It's just a minimum.
It's just the rules of the board. Yeah.
If everybody votes on something, everybody basically has to vote yes for something.
No. We just have to have a certain number of people that are able to vote.
But there are six votes, correct?
Yes, but because...
You need a minimum of six. So you have to have more than 50% of the board. And so currently the board is 10 people, although not all 10 people are here. So you need to have more than five, which is six.
Is there any way you bring this back up again?
That's what I'm saying is that what I would propose that we do is then just push this action item to the following meeting in November, which then hopefully we would have six eligible voting members with Mr. Hill being able to recuse himself. This would be the right thing to do. Yes, sir.
Yeah, so what would satisfy me? Would they have to be some written something from the police department?
I'd like to hear from the council member's office. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
So would they need to bring some kind of paperwork to you to show you that they have, in fact, recorded that these people were bringing alcohol to the field or...
What I would like to see is I would like to hear from the council member's office. And if they're not...
How would that happen?
With the council representative?
Council representative would need to come here to speak to you to let you know that...
Typically, we do have Lizzie Rodriguez, who is here, and I believe would be knowledgeable about this. I believe that she would be back. I know that she's typically here. Yes, so I believe that she'll be back in November.
More of a guidance for us to help us out to understand the process.
Yeah.
I'm going to make one thing clear that you guys are going to need. You're going to need somebody on the board to propose doing it, and you're going to need somebody else to second it, and then the board would take a vote on it, just so everybody understands. And I haven't heard anybody first it or second it, just being heads like straight up with you. And in addition to that, you're going to need at least six voting members on the board. And today, we have six, but he'll have to recuse himself, so he's got a five. So in theory, in a perfect world, more people show up from on the board next month, if it's back on the board next month, But in addition to that, a board member will have to propose it. Somebody else will have to second it, and then you'll have to get the majority of the board to agree on it. Just for full disclosure.
Can I also suggest, if there are letters that have been prepared to the council members so that we can understand what has specifically been asserted to them, if there are responses, if there's emails, I would like to understand what the city has to say. That would be very helpful. I would like to understand that. I'm uncomfortable with taking a position that this should be an exclusive use field without investigating the other side of this. Because I feel like whether it's, and actually I'm not really an adult soccer fan, I don't really care about that, but if there's just another youth activity that would like to occur on the field, this prohibits that.
That's why I stole this here, the 42. You see, they had the baseball field, but they also got soccer right there. For you.
Mr. Hill, what I'm saying is, what if there's a...
Can you see it?
Mr. Hill, what if there's a youth rugby team that would like to use the...
I have rugby.
This motion prohibits that, okay? And that's my concern. I don't want to prohibit other uses without unnecessarily recognizing
the city is putting money above our kids' safety. That's the bottom line. Our kids are getting hurt. Kids should be able to be kids and have fun. That's what it's all about. Kids being kids, man. You know, it's about fun, man. It's not fun when you slide and cut up with glass. It's not fun when some cat falls all over the whole thing. I forgot to bring it back. I went over there yesterday and me and my grandson picked up a whole bill size of bag of caps.
Mr. Hope, we're going to have
to move. It's not fun.
Okay.
And kids have a right to be kids. And have fun. That's what it's about. And it's been proven that adults and kids, players, must be separate.
Okay, Mr. Hill, we are moving on. Okay. We are not able to take a motion, so we will leave this without anything. I will keep this item as an action item for November, since we are not able to take an action. Okay? And I'm going to move us to the next item, which is going to be to approve the minutes.
Hey, before you guys do, we're going to take a family picture, everybody. A group picture.
Okay. Mr. Hill, we need to move on. We have this room for 10 more minutes.
Right.
So, if you are not going to be part of the board, then we're not going to be able to approve the meeting minutes.
Here.
Okay, thank you. So, we have two meeting minutes to approve. We have the July 8th, 2024 minutes. Is there any public comment on the July 8th, 2024 minutes? Seeing none. Is there any comments, edits?
Motion to approve.
Okay. So Aaron and I think I heard Oscar first. Okay. All those in favor, raise their hands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yes. Okay. Okay. My understanding, though, is that as long as you have read the minutes, it doesn't matter if you're here. You don't. It is a vote to affirm, but as long as you have read them, that's fine.
Yep.
Is everyone comfortable with that? Is everyone read the minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. So then the last item that we have is the September 9th, 2024 minutes. Are there public comments on the September 9th, 2024 minutes? Nothing from the public. Is there anything from the board? No? Okay. Is there a motion?
A motion.
Oscar? Thank you, Mr. Joe. Okay, and all those in favor, please raise your hands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, I'm just going to talk about our upcoming meetings. So our next meeting will be Monday, November 11th. We will move this petition to that item. I will make sure to reach out to Lizzie and Council District 8 and just make sure that they're here.
I prefer to go directly to Vivian.
That's fine, but I'm talking about the November 11th meeting.
I don't know.
She wants to come talk, that's fine. The only thing that I can promise is that Lizzie Rodriguez is typically here. So I will hopefully make sure that she's here, but I would like someone from the council member's office to be able to answer questions and to be able to express why the city is not following the rules.
Beyond the November 11th meeting, our December 9th meeting is typically done. So unless there is imperative business that needs to be held, our last meeting of the year will be November 11th. With that, is there a motion to adjourn? Aaron? Okay. All those in favor?
I second it.
I think we already got the thing from Mr. Hall. Okay.
Hey, come on, guys.
6-0. Okay. All right. 7:54.
You sure you want no input on this?
No, that's
you're a rep.